Project doing another episode of Monster in a Glass, our podcast where we review cocktails, look into the history, look into the past, figure out their origins, their ingredients, the name, and then kind of do a deep dive into the history surrounding them and the people and the times, and have a lot of fun doing it, because we're zany and crazy, and oftentimes make no sense.
Often. Most of the time.
Like 90% of the time,
yeah.
Because it's entertaining. And you're entertaining us.
I tamed your enter.
That's right. Entertaining us this evening will be our researcher, Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hola.
Also, semi-entertaining. He entertains semis.
I do. At truck stops.
Professor Mick, the Bone Doctor Layman.
Vroom, vroom.
I think you do more entertaining.
Entertaining.
That's...
Now we're going to go right into shellac. That's where this takes us.
I love the word shellac, by the way.
It's great. It's got a great sound.
It's got a good sound. It's, I mean, you know what shellac is, but you can also use it as a verb.
Yeah. That would be a better name for a child than blanket or apple.
Shellac.
You know, shellac.
I like it.
Shellac Cruise.
I like it.
But shellac Marceau.
Sounds like maybe like an evil wizard to me.
Shellac.
Shellac-a-lac-a-lac.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's gold, Jerry.
The reason why we're talking about shellac is because we're going to do the Japalac cocktail, which apparently is about paint or
varnish.
Something like that. Varnish. What's the difference between varnish and shellac?
I don't know.
Shellarnish.
Barnalac.
Sharnak.
Sharnish.
Sharnish and Valak.
Didn't
one
come from bugs? One of them was like a thing bugs excreted. Okay,
you just said the grossest thing today.
No, seriously.
We're covering our walls with bug
poo. Yeah, no.
Bug excretion. That sounds disgusting. Yeah, but when you say bug poo, I don't even... Like,
bug poo.
But excretion...
Doesn't have the...
Yeah.
No, because I think it might be when they chewed bark. Like, it's weird. I'll look it up.
Okay, so, what did you find out about the Japalac cocktail? Well, what the fuck is a Japalac?
Well, Japalac, as you said, is a varnish, but the Japalac cocktail is a drink that is made up of 1/4 whiskey, 1/4 French vermouth, a dash of raspberry syrup, and 1/4 orange. And now I'm giving you the recipe that is the only written recipe that I can find.
Really?
What Haig gives is, and which sounds more reasonable, is 3/4 of an ounce of dry vermouth, 3/4 of an ounce rye whiskey, 1 teaspoon of raspberry syrup, juice of 1/4 of orange. And why I say it sounds more reasonable, because I'm going to repeat the recipe, the original recipe, which is juice of 1/4 orange, so you have 1/4, 1/4 part French vermouth, 1/4 whiskey, and a dash of raspberry syrup.
That's a lot of raspberry syrup.
Do you see the problem with the math there? You have 3/4. Where's the rest of the drink?
The rest is spit.
It's
well, the rest is
actual bugs. I just looked it up.
is
I'm
bug,
not fucking with you.
Bug excretion.
Yep.
That might be what it is. Is that what frap is? Because that's in the original recipe.
No, I remember watching some weird show about like how some of the paintings, you know, famous paintings, are coated in it so they don't.
They spray it with bugs.
Yeah. No, they have to harvest them and they grind up the bugs and it creates like a clear coat.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Really weird. And it's super toxic. Like, can't get it in your eyes or anything, or your eyes fall out of your head, and it's gross. It's really gross.
Bugs are gross.
How do people discover...
Find out about it, right. I don't know.
It's like, bizarre. Well, we're going to take these bugs that will peel your face off.
Right.
And we're going to...
You become the most beautiful corpse.
Grind them cleared. Up and plaster it all over
the thought it was just, really bizarre.
Can I just say, I feel that way about all inventions throughout... all time is just so you're like, how did one come across the idea to do that? I mean, I get it with certain things, but with that you're like, how did you just try a bunch of shit? You're like, that didn't work.
Yeah.
That erased my painting.
Yeah, well, my painting's your fucking gone, asshole. Get some bugs.
Right. Okay, I ground up tiger cum.
Yeah.
And that didn't do it. So.
Plus, getting it was really difficult.
Right. Like, it's just, it's bad. Like, I mean, it's the same thing as, like, you know, when people are like, well, you know, like, all of the medicine that we have, it's all natural. People, like, ate that. It grows in the forest. You just chew the leaves. You're like, how did you figure that out?
Yeah, so, because like, half of the stuff will kill you.
Right. Lots like, of people die. You're like, oh, well, that's poison ivy. Okay. So the next thing, you're like, I feel a little bit better. It's not quite it.
Yeah.
I know trial and error probably factored in. But
I think a lot.
Like, how many people died before they were like, okay, don't eat that one. Don't use bug excretion.
Well,
in your
at least
eyes.
One, right? And then somebody said something. Like, yeah, don't eat that shit.
Bug excretion.
Did you see what happened to him?
Blind.
Oh, sorry for the detour. That was funny.
So you have this drink. Either way, though, it is made up of whiskey, French vermouth, orange juice, and raspberry syrup. No matter what the math is, and what Hank points out is kind of a small cocktail. By moderate standards, and when I started thinking about it, I was like, it kind of is. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of liquid in there. You know, the original recipe is calling for one fourth part, but the recipe he gives, and maybe this is sort of an equivalent based on math, which I can't do. So
neither can he.
The original guy was like, just keep adding one fourths. I don't know. Did we get to a full?
Are we there?
Whatever. If we didn't, it doesn't matter. But, you know, that the 3/4 of an ounce of whiskey, 3/4 of an ounce of dry vermouth, that's 1.5 ounces of booze, and then you add the juice of 1/4 of an orange, which is not actually that much. I mean, you see quarter, and you think, like, well, 1/4 of an ounce of juice, but it's really just the juice of 1/4 of an orange, mm-hmm. which is not a whole lot, and then a teaspoon of raspberry syrup. So it is a very boozy drink, and it is probably very small. I mean, you really only have 1.5 ounces of liquid, maybe a little more, 1.25 ounces of liquid, probably. Yeah, and it sounds powerful. I mean, when you kind of look at it, it's whiskey and vermouth and juice flavoring. He says, the cocktail is a powerful, largely undiluted bolt of unfettered flavor and of alcohol. I'm not sure about the unfettered flavor because I haven't had it, so it's probably, it seems pretty, sounds pretty good. But yeah, like 1.5 ounces of booze is basically a shot.
Yeah.
So you're doing a shot with like juice flavoring in it, and I'm sure if you have, you know, you're drinking it slower than a shot, I would assume, unless you shoot cocktails. But it's pretty much a dry Manhattan flavored. Based on the recipe. So the recipe that it comes from is the Old Waldorf Bar Days from 1931. And that's the only place I could find it. Absolutely only place. And I was surprised because I was kind of hoping with a name like Jablag, it's like, good. It's not named the Tom. You know, like where I'd be able to like search it and not come across 1,000 different variations on it. And it's like, nope, that's it. That's the only place it shows up.
Where does it show up again?
1931.
In what?
The Old Waldorf Bar Days by Albert Stevens Crockett.
Huh.
And
that's the first time for that one, right?
The first time. Yeah, I haven't used this book before. It's something that was like newly added to the interwebs and searchable. So I haven't seen it before, but it really is the only place I could find it. I mean, I searched through, you know, 30, 40 cocktail books and tried to find it, and I couldn't find it anywhere, but... You know, we've come across this before where a drink is a one-off and it only appears in one drink, but as I started looking into it, it started seeming a little bit odd that I couldn't find it anywhere else. And kind of the major reason behind that is because he attributes it to a guy named Johnny Solon. I'm going to call it Johnny Solon, but it's S-O-L-O-N. He is named as the creator of the cocktail. And if you start looking him up, he's kind of well-known, at least on the internet. People talk about him all the time. And the reason he is... most well known is because he was the creator of the Bronx cocktail. So I tried to find a lot about him, and I couldn't find anything about this guy except in the Old Waldorf Bar Days book, where there's a lot about this guy. Lot. And it more that you're like, what's this book about again? Is it about Johnny Solon? I thought there were recipes in this book. But he was a pre-prohibition bartender at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York. And he was, as I said, he's mentioned as the creator of the Bronx Cocktail. The, what's funny about that is that they talk about it, and if you look online, people are like, Johnny Salon, he was the creator of the Bronx Cocktail. But in this book, he said, the author says, well, when I asked him how he came up with the drink or how he created it, he couldn't really remember when or why he created it. He was like, I don't know, sometime in the early 20th century.
Wow.
Like, he just couldn't really... It was like his best guess was sometime in the early 1900s. It's like, dude, like...
Lots of things.
You're like, you must be making lots of cocktails. So what he came into bartending after the Spanish-American War. He was a soldier there in the... or the Spanish-American-Cuban War, as we found out with Cuba Libre. Yeah. And he was actually... He started working as a cashier in a hotel in St. Louis. And when he got hired at the Waldorf Astoria... And this is all in the book. I'm not making this shit up. Like, this is the guy's description of this. That he had no formal training as a bartender. He was hired as a bartender at the Waldorf Astoria in New York because he had cashier experience at a hotel in St. Louis. I was like,
wow.
You're like, can I be a professional football player?
Different times.
Well, what's your background? I sweep shit in the street. Yeah, come on board.
I caught a ball once, but it was a baseball.
I watched a football game on TV once. Good, you're in. But apparently he became like really good at it. He was like the most like well-liked and most requested bartender at the Waldorf Astoria.
Fake it till you make it.
I know, right? He must have just had natural skill. Yeah, he was like, yeah, sure, I'll make a Jap-O-Lack. But... one of the things they mentioned is he was known for his mint juleps, which took 30 minutes to make. And he basically said, like...
Dinner.
Right? You know, like, did 30 minutes.
The leaves and then pee them out into your drink?
He better. For 30 minutes? I better not be fucking waiting 30 minutes for a cocktail. Or it better be free. When I started questioning, it was like people. He was like, "Well," and people in the know would wait 30 minutes. They knew to go and have a snack or another drink, I guess, until it was made.
That's the angle, right?
It's just him in a fucking hammock.
You're gonna have to wait 30 minutes. Here, have some fries.
Yeah,
and a steak,
buy a t-shirt,
and oysters, and yeah.
I started thinking though, was it really good, or did people just think it was good because they waited so long? Because what if he was just really bad at it? And every time somebody requested it, he'd be like, oh, fuck.
I can't remember what the fuck happened.
It's like, it basically, a mint julep is like three ingredients.
Yeah.
Not even. It's like,
well,
basically
yeah, but
two.
It's like, do I muddle the leaves or not?
Right.
You could see him like dropping glasses and like eating the mint leaves and like peeing in the cup. I don't know. Like, people are like, he's a he does, like, you wouldn't even believe it's an amazing cocktail. But I have a feeling he was just really bad at it. That's like, that was just the people were like, yeah, I don't know. He's really, takes 30 minutes. That must be good.
These mint juleps are so warm.
Yeah. No, that's me. Like, aren't they supposed to be really, like, ice cold? Like,
not Jimmy Salon.
But like other bartenders, he was also a teetotaler. He didn't actually drink, which always makes me worried. Like, how's a bartender good if they don't drink? Like, don't you need to taste it? And maybe they tasted it, but they were like, I don't drink it. I just taste it to make sure it tastes good.
That's what's going on.
But that, I've read that before, that there were a lot of bartenders who were teetotalers.
Well, there's a lot of things that are hard to do when you're wasted.
When shit tastes good, That's number one. Oh, that doesn't taste good.
Measure.
I don't know. I'm
drunk. Properly measure things. It's also difficult. You know?
What's in that? A little bit of this, and a little bit of that.
It was actually 1/4 gallon, is what that ratio was.
That's right. Yeah. Original recipe, he asked me, he was like, I don't fucking know. A gallon? A quarter? I can't do math. Why are you asking me? I was a cashier.
I was a cashier, fucker.
But, I mean, being a fancy hotel in New York, one of the things that they mentioned, that he served a lot of bigwigs in New York, J.P. Morgan being one of them, but there were a lot of wealthy people that requested him as their bartender when they would go in there. But the more I researched, the more it seemed like the only thing he was famous for was the Bronx Cocktail. I was like, well, that's not really being famous. I mean, like, Miro, he's famous for making the Bronx cocktail. I'm like, yeah, okay, it's kind of a famous drink, but then you're kind of a one-trick pony. Then you're the guy who did that. It's kind of like the aviation and Hugo Ensslin. People will be like, he was a great influencer. Like, he actually was only known for one drink, basically. Like, he was a bartender, but, like, he wasn't, like, super famous. But aside from the extensive coverage by Crockett about him, who really wrote about him like a teenager writing about a crush in a diary, like, it was... He seriously went into this guy's ancestry about, like, how he's really from, you know, he's Greek in ancestry, but he's really from Ireland. And like, talking about the name Ceylon and how what it means in Greek. And, like, there were, like, three pages about this guy. I was like...
Wow.
There was so much about this guy. Wow. Like, his personal life that I was like, but isn't this book about the Waldorf Astoria? Because he's, you know... Anyway.
He is the Waldorf Astoria.
That's what it kind of made it seem like. Because it's like, oh, yeah, there were other bartenders, but fuck those guys. You know, like, they don't count.
They didn't make a cocktail.
They didn't make one cocktail. So maybe he was well-known in bartender circles, but, you know, and maybe because of the Bronx cocktail, which is, you know...
You know, you think about it. How many bartenders were there in New York or wherever, and then how many of them got published? I mean...
Right, and that's the thing, is, like, this guy didn't get published... Somebody else published and just talked a shitload about him and talked about the Bronx cocktail.
Yeah, but his cocktail, I mean, he's the established creator of it. It got attention.
Yeah, I mean, how many bartenders were there across the U.S. who didn't publish books? And that's kind of what I was like, maybe he wasn't flashy or self-promoting. If he couldn't remember when the fuck he created the Bronx cocktail, I was like, I don't know. I make cocktails, don't ask me when I did it or why. Like, it's not that important. Like, maybe he was just good. Maybe he was just naturally good at it.
I think some people just had people promoting them better, or
maybe.
I think of like the Only William. How much
he was a self-promoter.
I know, but like in the sense of like how many things did he make that actually made an impact, and how many of those things could he recall? After making him once.
Right. And
I mean, it's just
and
like...
that's what I wonder if maybe this guy was... Maybe he was a fantastic bartender, but maybe he was like, I don't want to be famous. I do what I do. Maybe it was a job. Maybe to him he was good at it and he was like, it's my job. Why am I being, you know...
Yeah.
And now this is like... I should say, this book was published 30 years or so after the fact that... After the presumed creation of the Bronx cocktail. So it's even looking back at it, maybe he just didn't give a shit. He was like, I don't think about like writing this down. No. Like, I'd make it. That's just what I do. And so, I mean, that could be it. But it is such an unusual name. It was like Japlack. When you first told me about it, you're like, we're doing the Japlack cocktail. The first thing that popped into my head was Alice in Wonderland. I started thinking about the Jabberwocky.
Yeah.
And I was like, that sounds crazy, the Japlack. It sounds like an animal.
I thought you were spoonerizing apple juice.
It actually does, right?
Huh. Yeah.
It's kind of a spoonerizing of Applejack. But Japlack is a thing, and it was a color varnish made with Japanese lacquer.
What's a color varnish?
It's a varnish that it comes in different colors.
Oh, so it's designed to color what you're painting.
Right, so it's more like a stain. But it was like a stain and a varnish in one.
And a varnish is something clear. That's used, shiny. It's clear.
To make it shiny, yeah.
To make it shiny, is it?
Like those, like the Japanese
water
furniture. Repellent? No, it's like super black and shiny, almost looks like a mirror.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, so like the varnish is like shellac, where it's like a clear coat. It makes it look shiny, so no matter what you paint it, it's a seal, but it also makes it look very shiny and mirror-like.
And this has color.
And it has colors. And it was created by the Glidden Company. It was marketed as a fast-drying varnish and stain. And as far as I can tell, it kind of died out in the 1950s. At least that's when the ads kind of die out.
Where does it come from?
Glidden. Glidden was the company that
created
it.
When did it first start again?
1895 was the first introduction of it, where it introduced it. They say introduced Japlack, a color varnish for the consumer market. So maybe... industrial it was available. I don't know why.
Wasn't there a huge like oriental movement?
There might have been
like for aesthetics that came in
at the time, probably. I mean, I think anything that wasn't American was kind of exotic. Well, let's say anything that was Asian was kind of exotic.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And so there was part of that, and that actually shows up in their advertising. Mm-hmm. They pushed a lot of this Japanese, you know, they would have like a geisha with a right. fan, and it's like, what does that have to do with the varnish? It's like, well, it's made with Japanese lacquer. You're like, that's kind of racist. Like, I don't think it's named after like geishas. Like, what are you talking about? But they created it in 1895, or at least released it, and it became one of the better known varnish brands. And in 1903, they even mentioned this, that it was a remarkable advertising account, which was $60,000. That's 1903 dollars. That, by today's money, that's $1.5 million.
In ads.
For 1903. And
Clinton was doing all right.
They were doing all right. And it was advertised like crazy in periodicals and newspapers. I couldn't even believe how often I could find ads. Just searching newspapers, it kind of comes up everywhere, and
was
you're like,
everybody like shellacking the world,
right?
Back then?
What the fuck? You're like,
sounds like a real shiny fucking industry.
Like, how much wood was there? Were you shellacking
everything
trees?
Everything was shellacked.
I don't like these trees. They're too.
It was rough. The rage, right?
Shellacking was the rage. All the kids are doing it.
No frapping. It was shellacking.
They were ads in newspapers, ads in journals, and they were. You know, they would advertise in signs and paints and stores. They had cards that they would use to promote their product. And there's a book called The Psychology of Advertising by Walter Dill Scott. And that's from 1913. There were a lot of editions, but the edition I was looking at was from 1913. And he actually talks about the Japalack advertising campaign and specifically these advertising cards that he put out. And he said, if I had seen these and similar cards for a few months, even though I had never seen anyone actually using the paint, I should assume that everyone is using Japalack. The suggestion would thereupon be in an extreme form and be liable to cause me to imitate what I assumed everyone else was doing. As a matter of fact, I was affected in just this manner. When occasion arose to purchase some paint for household use, I called for Japalack under the assumption that I had seen it used frequently. Like, so this is a guy who at Northwestern has buildings named after him, or it's the family. He is a very well-known person in advertising history. Is saying he was even swayed by the advertising. He was just like, of course I'm going to use this. I see it everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, that's how much money they were putting in. I mean, he talks about how they kind of relentlessly marketed this and tried to get it in as many stores as possible. And in the ads, they would say that they're available at paint stores and drug stores for, you know, a certain range of prices. But he said, but one of their campaign things that they did, or their advertising campaign, was if you don't see it in your, if you're a local store, you send us a letter, you tell us what store it is, and send us 10 cents and we'll send you a free sample. You hear that? 10 cents and we'll send you a free sample. And so they're getting money for a free sample. And they're finding out what stores are not carrying their product.
Yeah.
And so they were like, they went nuts on this shit. You were like,
brilliant.
How good was this product that they were promoting it so heavily? And as I was going, like, wow, that's pretty crazy, like, that they put that much money into an ad campaign for fucking varnish.
Yeah.
Like, were they varnishing the world at the time?
It must have been.
We've got a corner of the market.
Like, varnish your cat.
New cat varnish.
Yeah.
You know
that
what
should be.
Every pussy needs Japalack.
But seriously, I mean, did they have, like, did they find a volcano full of Japalack or something? Like, they must have just...
I don't know.
The truck.
I mean, like, you have to be so confident in
right.
your product that you're producing that you're like, look, we got to advertise the shit out of this, because, I mean, I'm sure there were other varnishes, but they were just really going out, and that's kind of what Walter Dill Scott's book was saying. Was like, they made it seem like every other varnish was a piece of shit. They're like, wait a minute, you're not carrying Japalack?
Yeah.
You can't find Japalack?
I like how they made the, like, quality of the vendor. Like, if your vendor
yeah.
isn't carrying it. They're, he's not being genuine. Oh, yeah.
You better tell us what they're
doing.
Stay away
from that piece of shit. Yeah. Right. Unbelievable marketing.
They, I mean, the amount of money, you say $60,000 and $1.5 million. I mean, by today's standards, people, the Super Bowl costs more, you know, right. one 30-second spot costs more than that. But at the time, I mean, that must have been a shitload of money to be thrown behind something like this.
Really?
And it's... I mean,
it's varnish.
I know.
That's what I'm saying. They're varnishing like their barn and
after
the cow.
People are like, I need some varnish.
I don't know what this is,
but I want
I
it.
Need some.
That's what it is.
My store doesn't carry it. Why don't you carry Jap? Right. Like, what's Jap? Like? I don't know.
I don't know.
But I know you don't carry it because
for some reason Jap-like I need some varnish.
I need it.
Right now.
I need varnish now.
Wow. So the earliest ad that I could find, and I'm not saying this was the earliest ad, because it probably was, but was from the Ladies' Home Journal from 1898. And as I was going through these, I was going, you know what's very odd? Is these ads are clearly, clearly being marketed towards women. Clearly. There was no joke. Every single one of them was marketed towards women. There were always women. Every one of them I looked at, I was like, what is happening? It's like women varnishing floors and women varnishing desks and women varnishing shelves. And I was like, then I came across this one and it even says, it says, please insist, underlined,
yeah.
on genuine Jap-O-Lak. And remember, madam, that the dealer who stocks and sells you genuine Jap-O-Lak will sell you genuine other things. Go
right.
bang right here. Like,
right.
we're going to shit all over
perfect.
The guy you're
yeah.
buying
perfect
shit from
campaign,
because,
man.
Like, because, you know, because in their minds, they're like, well, this lady's going to go in the store and go, why aren't you carrying Jap-O-Lak?
Yeah.
And they're like,
I'm not
going to
buy
anything
chips.
Else because
yeah.
you don't sell Jap-O-Lak.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was relentless how much that they were marketing. And he says, in this one about the madam, he says, he knows that your satisfaction is too big an asset to risk for a few cents extra profit
shit.
For an inferior article. So it's like trashing other products. Getting it in stores, using the consumer
to market
your
yeah.
product. It's like, were these guys fucking mad geniuses?
Yeah, it's like textbook, man. Like, they wrote the book on advertising.
Like, and now when you have Walter Scott
yeah.
talking about it, then you know it's like, it must have been an effective campaign.
Yeah. what happens is the husband comes home and everything's fucking varnished. You're like, what the fuck happened?
Like, sit down and you're like...
Yeah, I can see my reflection
in the
shelves, honey.
Well, then,
I can see my reflection everywhere.
And what the most striking one, which I saw, was the one that was in Walter Scott's book, where he was talking about these cards that they would have, and every one of them, it's the same woman in every ad, varnishing a rocking chair, varnishing shelves, varnishing a floor, smiling like a fucking maniac.
Wow.
Like, that she is some kind of Stepford wife, where she's like, I'm varnishing. I'm varnishing
she's
everything.
Probably high as hell.
And I'm like, dude, varnishing is backbreaking fucking
yeah,
work.
It really is.
And you're inhaling horrible
fumes.
Like, and they're like, I'm happy to be doing that. And most ads were like that. But if they weren't just, like, you know, varnishing everything in their house, they were sitting on a varnish brush or holding a brush or holding a can of Jap-O-Lak. It was always women, though. And not even just, like, women, but, like, middle-class women. You know, not, like, poor women. It wasn't, like, a peasant holding a can of Jap-O-Lak. It was, like, you know, a middle-class woman with a bustle and a, you know, a hat. And you're like... Is this woman varnishing shit? Like, in her
right.
Sunday church
she
clothes?
She puts all of her clothes on and then varnishes stuff?
But it was like newspaper after newspaper.
Wow.
And for years, I was like, this is crazy how much they're pushing towards women. Even in the American Architect and Building News, there'd be women in their ads. And I'm like, but presumably, at the time, like, there were, and not to say that there were no female architects, but that there were probably not very many, and
yeah.
they were probably not marketing this magazine to female architects. So, who's this for that they're, like, advertising in an architecture magazine? And even if the ad didn't have a woman in it, it might just have a hand holding a can or, like, a paintbrush. The whole rest of the ad would be things for women. Negligees, dress forms, fancy hats.
The whole rest of the page?
Yeah. It would be like a new... It was like,
wow.
Come to our store. We
it's
have
like
cookware.
Were...
We have ribbons. and Jap-a-lack.
It's like they were conditioning a whole demo, you know?
It is
bizarre.
Insane.
Or they created demographic.
Well, what's the angle, though? Why target...
And that's what I couldn't...
Like, are they easier? Are they trying to target women to then get men but to buy them Jap-a-lack?
Right.
What's the angle?
Maybe they were all huffing
Jap-a-lack. That thing had to be pretty fucking potent. And they would say things like, beautiful and beauty. I mean, it was very, like, every part of it was, like, it stank of, like...
pandering.
Yeah. You're like, what is
like,
happening?
You're an idiot.
Are you telling me there are
coated.
No men who varnish anything? And then I started thinking, and as I'm going through this, and I'm going, this is crazy. This is crazy, like, how much they're pandering to women. It's like, I started thinking that my own judgment was clouded, because nowadays, when I think of varnishing, my own bias is like, when I think of varnishing and staining things... Yeah. I picture some fat dude with a beard, like, I'm in the garage and I built a, you know, a thing and I varnished, and clearly that's not like what happens all the time, but I don't think even commercials nowadays advertise it that way, but like, in my mind, I'm like, it's just this like thing.
I don't think of women,
it's
for
like
sure.
A manly
I don't think of
thing.
Women varnishing stuff.
And
at
the
all.
Ads that they have, it's like, everything that they're wearing is impractical.
Right.
Like,
no, you think of some
you don't
with
wear
overalls.
A fancy hat and varnish unless you've been huffing the varnish.
You think
and you're
of
like, I just put on my Sunday best.
You think of like grandpa in the overalls making
exactly.
a birdhouse, varnishing it, you know? Like,
right.
It's weird
grandpa's
how it's
been out in the garage huffing
varnish,
varnish making
yeah.
birdhouses.
That's how he puts up with the grandchildren.
But it like the only time I saw, there was a couple ads that I saw where it looked like a maid or a servant. Mm. Like a one who looked like a French maid, and like, but I couldn't be sure. But even in that sense, it was appealing to a certain class of women. And you got to think, like, what are you varnishing? Like, if you're varnishing, you're probably, you know, it's like, well, varnish your old furniture. Well, poor people don't have furniture that they're
right.
taking along with them. You know, it's not like you're probably of a certain standing if you can take your nice furniture that you'd be willing to varnish. Because if you're poor, you're like, it's broken.
Yeah.
Throw it in the garbage.
I'd like
you're
to
not
afford
like, this is a
new
family
one.
Heirloom.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to sit on something. We don't need to.
It is bizarre because it's not cosmetic at all. Like, it's not a woman thing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Even if you were a housewife, still, it must be just something that we don't see anymore.
Right.
They must have varnished stuff way more.
Maybe.
You just don't see that anymore.
But it also, it kind of gets in this idea that, well... clearly, men aren't doing it because they work all day. Like,
yeah.
this idea... I mean, it's like, you know, that hasn't fucking changed. Like, you look at ads today, and you're like, yeah, I mean, like, they're still doing that, where they're like, you know, well,
only
hey, ladies, pick
laundry.
This up, because we know you're not working a
right.
job. And you're like, what planet is this, where, like, yeah. women aren't working jobs? But I started looking... I was like, well, is this a thing that Glidden did? And I started looking at ads throughout, like... just trying to see if I could find ads throughout, you know, the next century. And even throughout the 1950s and 60s, and even into the 70s, it was always a woman. It would be a Glidden ad. A woman in, like, a dress, smiling like a maniac, painting something. You're like,
huh.
But, like, it was consistent with Glidden. And, you know, I started even, like, looking at it, things were popping up for Dutch Boy. And not the same. It was Glidden was sort of pushing this thing with
they
women.
They had their demo, man.
They
must
knew,
have, like,
yeah.
the housewife, like, they're getting them, like, right at the core, like, do you keep a good
yeah.
house?
Right.
A good house is shiny. You can see
yeah.
your reflection, everything.
It's well painted.
It's
well
varnished.
Varnished everything. But I started thinking as I was researching this, and it's like, advertising hasn't changed. You know, I'll sit and watch a football game, and all the commercials, it's truck commercials.
Beer and trucks.
And beer.
Yeah.
And then baby food commercials during daytime TV, and you're like, their image of what happens in the world has not changed in 100 years. Like, men are men, and they like trucks and beer, and women like babies and, you know, fancy things. So, we'll show those during soap operas.
Right.
You're like... It was crazy to watch, like, over 100 years. Nothing has changed
it
in
is
advertising.
Crazy.
Like, the pander.
I've taken to shaking the fist at commercials.
See, that just doesn't sound like that would appeal to many people anymore.
And that's what I don't
like,
get.
Like, it's not, like, if all the advertisers are old. Like, they're outdated,
yeah.
they're not paying attention. They're vampires. That's what it is.
I think, yeah, they're so much...
They turned to vampires 100 years ago, uh-huh. and they've stayed as advertising executives, still thinking the same damn crap.
And that's what I don't get, is like, clearly it does, it shouldn't appeal to most people, where you're like, but that's not me. Like, maybe, of course I know how to change a fucking diaper, I'm not.
Maybe I don't, like, maybe I don't realize that I don't like trucks.
Even if I did like trucks, these commercials make it seem like I should be fucking climbing mountains in my truck. I mean, like, it's just out of touch with everything.
And I'm sure they've done the studies.
I guess.
That deep within your genetics, you want a four-wheel drive.
I do. I mean, that's true. But,
they know you better than you know yourself.
What I want is varnish. No varnish. I mean, like, deep in
what I want is a woman varnishing. I want a woman just to varnish for me.
I want her to dress in her nicest fucking clothes
and watch,
varnish for me.
Ooh, baby.
You know that is a sexual fetish right now. Right?
I bet.
Let me see you varnish that chair.
Dude, varnish makes you fucking high. I can't even sit, like, I've painted shit in my garage and I'm like, dude, I need to get out of here before I fucking crash.
Can you imagine all the people that lit stuff on fire, like smoking and varnishing back in the day? Like,
yeah. Not even missing a beat, just like that shit out.
Yeah, it's fine.
No fire extinguisher, just hit it with a oily rag.
Yeah. it's good for the lungs.
Yeah.
It's natural.
It's natural. It's fire. Fire's an element.
What the fuck is cancer?
Yeah.
Bring this all back. So why is the Jap-O-Lack cocktail? I mean, it's just a one-off. It's named after varnish. I mean, out of anything we've ever done, I was like, this is the stupidest thing. It's like, even things like who knows why the name? Because they just felt like it. I was like, this is kind of the stupidest thing to name a drink after.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was something that was, I could see it if it was made of, like, rot gut and, like, whiskey and bourbon.
Something that challenged
you. Like, there's not, something like a Long Island iced tea. If you call it a Jap line, you're like, yeah, because it's like kind of like drinking Everclear and a dash of Angostura bitters.
Right.
That, you know, a whole glass. That I could see being like, yeah, we call it Jap line because it's kind of like varnish. It didn't really make sense. And it just didn't show up anywhere else. Especially for someone, you know, who is as famous as they say for creating the Bronx cocktail. If you have your drink like the Bronx cocktail, you know, alongside things like, you know, Tom Collins and Sidecar, where people know it really well, you know, like, you think, like, oh, maybe the Jap-O-Lack would take off. And we know that bartenders kind of experimented often, and have all these drinks, and they come up with a recipe book, and they just fill it out with all kinds of fucking things. But this is the type of cocktail that probably didn't catch on in bars. I mean, not because of what it was made of, but it's named the Jap-O-Lack, and Albert Stevens Crockett, the guy who wrote the old Waller bar book, even says, styled in compliment for a paint or varnish man, which doesn't sound too confident in itself, but he's right. I mean, like, what else would it be named after? It's named after the varnish. So I was like, well, okay, so Johnny Salon, he's famous in bartender circles. Wealthy people really know him. Glidden had a branch in New York. They were based out of Cleveland.
I like this angle.
So maybe somebody was in their bar, maybe some bigwig at Glidden, and they were like, hey!
Or even maybe closer, an ad man.
An ad man. Who knows? Who was, you know, was like, hey there, pally. You know, your bar is looking a little bit scuffed up. I got a product for you. You know, like trying to sell every, you know, who knows? I mean, that's the only thing I could think of where it's like, why would you name it that way?
I think that this was a major product. I think it was very visible.
Yeah.
And I think somehow it made an impression on the culture that meant something that we don't know.
Yeah, I imagine that. Yeah.
I mean, it for as much ads that they had and the amount of money that they put in, I mean, it was like, I mean, I can't think of an equivalent right now. I mean, you could say things like McDonald's or whatever, but like,
or Apple. I mean,
Apple. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just this symbol, but and that's true. I mean,
but I think that Apple is more than the computer. It's also tied in with Steve Jobs.
Sure.
And so if you don't know Steve Jobs.
Right.
And you're seeing all these Apple ads.
Yeah, you wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get
just
it
like
at all.
Just like we're not getting it.
That's why, maybe it's something with the women in some sense that we're not plugged into anymore. We just have, maybe the varnish thing, there was something there. Because I don't think I've ever touched varnish in my entire life. That's not a part of my life. And I bet that's true of many of
most people.
And even if nobody was really using it, I mean, as Walter Scott said, like, he bought it because he was like, well, I assumed everybody was using it, but maybe they weren't. I mean, maybe it was just like, I mean, they must have been buying it, otherwise they would have given up on the campaign. So maybe people were buying it based on this fact that they assumed everybody else was using it. But I gotta imagine, I mean, if you're serving all these bigwigs, maybe Glidden himself, and I can't remember his first name, but there was one of the founders, his name was Glidden, and he was around at this time. He was there through this campaign. Maybe he lived in New York. Maybe it was like, you know, he was proud of it, you know, like that he could have pushed this. But you think that, like, with a name like Jappalak, and being as kind of pervasive as it was in the ads, and as you're saying, like, maybe it was everywhere and everybody knew about it, why didn't it show up in any other books? Like, it's an easy one to me. Like, you can name
it. Because it's
like,
so characteristic.
Yeah, I mean, with that, all the cocktails that we've looked at where there's just, like, barely, it's a name that, whatever, the Dick Jr. Like, nobody's talking about that one. But, like, this one is an easy one. It's a name. It's a weird name. Everybody recognizes it, maybe, that it's, you know, it was created around the time that...
Well, it sounds like it's tied to a ubiquitous product that we're not aware of because nobody fucking varnishes anymore.
Right. It's just...
It's like baking soda or some shit, you know? Like, everybody has varnish, of course.
Well, one thing that I started thinking about, though, is
next to the emergency varnish.
Well, but I have my varnish, and then I have my backup varnish, and then I have my substitute varnish. And
right.
But they made it in all kinds of colors, too. That was, like, the kind of the appeal. It was, like, the first one where it was like, you could get it in any color.
it's got to be, like,
I need to go get emergency varnish, by the
way. It feels like a feedback loop where they created, like, the housewife demographic by this campaign.
Yeah. And maybe there were ads
Or at least fostered it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was weird.
It's really weird.
It was enough that I noticed it right away. Yeah. When I was like, why is every ad a woman? Like, there were... And it wasn't like I was going... I was kind of looking through ads to see if there was any information that might be helpful in figuring out, like, why this guy named the drink tender. But I was like, I was like, why is there women doing weird shit in this? Like, literally smiling like maniacs. Like, they had been huffing varnish. Not like a natural smile. Like,
That would be brilliant if that's exactly what it was. Like, it was a drug. Nobody had anything wink, shiny, wink. And everybody's just huffing varnish back in 19 fucking whatever. They're just high as hell on varnish.
But you know what? That got me thinking, because as I was thinking, I'm like, I don't get it. Why didn't this show up anywhere else? The bartender's sort of famous. The name's kind of weird.
Yeah.
The ad campaign's all is bigger than they'd seen ever, and. So why didn't this show up everywhere else? Then I started thinking, okay, where it shows up in print is 20 to 30 years after it probably showed up that this guy created it. Guy can't even remember how he created his most famous cocktail.
Yeah.
Hey, he probably doesn't remember how that started. So you're looking back on it. But even so, he created it in a very particular place, in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, where you have very wealthy people. Now,
and probably numerous shiny surfaces.
Very shiny surfaces.
Required.
Yeah.
If this is 20 to 30 years later, you have 20 to 30 years of this product being shoved down everybody's throats. I mean, literally, it is everywhere. You could see why other bartenders and other, you know, because all these other bartenders are trying to fill up recipe books and looking for cocktail recipes everywhere. You'd think they would have been like, that one sounds weird. Let's put that one in there. That sounds good. I mean, it sounds like probably a tasty drink, too. It's not like... It sounds gross. But the association with the varnish. Would you drink something that you're like... You know it's named after varnish.
That's
varnish.
What I'm saying. I think there's some weird, insidious, like, underpinning to this thing.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knew, yeah, I'm huffing varnish. So I'm huffing Jack Black.
Or maybe when we try the cocktail, maybe there's something about it.
It makes you shiny
on the inside. Maybe there's something about the smell, or maybe, I don't know.
Your poop is going to be shellac.
The inside of the toilet is all shiny.
Just wait. After and you tinted. Drink this, just wait.
Yeah. I'll bet you, though, it just had one of those things that it could have tasted amazing. Unicorns and rainbows and... But still, it's named after a varnish. Like, would you go into a bar and be like, give me the drink that's named after a varnish? Even if you knew what was in it, you'd be like, this doesn't sound good.
Unless, like you said earlier, maybe it was a challenge. You know what I mean? Like, oh, can you handle the Jap-O-Lack? It's got orange juice. Or, you know, it tastes raspberry-y.
Yeah.
You know, like, it needs to be like,
you're like, yeah,
it's going to kill you.
Yeah, but it's...
Snake bite, you know?
That could be. I mean, maybe it was... But it just...
Well...
But the ingredients there's don't
also,
match
There's
that.
Also that everything has to be associated with the Jap-O-Lack or it's shit.
Could be.
It's so good, it's Jap-O-Lack.
Yeah, right? Oh, okay. I like this angle. They did go for that, I could see that. Because it was a standard they set.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if the ad company...
Yeah.
It's just... It seems so localized, though.
Why, you got some real Jap-O-Lack there!
Right.
I wonder if that was...
Dude, that one copy that you read would definitely back that up. Like, if you don't have Jap-O-Lack, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Tell me who they are.
Yeah.
Tell me what storm is. You're like stormtroopers.
Right.
Shiny. The glitter short
varnish stormtroopers stocking your shelves.
With maniacal smiles.
They don't even make you pay for it. They're like, we're just going to put it on your shelf.
Actually, that's starting to make me...
Yeah, I think that's
you know, that, like, it's a word demonstrating quality or value.
I mean, they definitely made it. That was their goal, was to make it... Make everything else seem like
the standard, basically.
The quality.
They're setting the standard.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do in advertising. You don't want to crap on everybody else's product.
And maybe.
But you make yours seem like you can't live without mine.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're trying that shit.
Okay. So.
We're getting there.
Johnny Solon makes a cocktail called the Jap-O-Lack because everybody really digs Jap-O-Lack and it sets the standard, like you were saying, but it's a drink, and you're calling your drink shellac or varnish, and that's why it doesn't work.
Right.
Because
at the end of the day,
you don't want to drink
varnish.
Paint. Yeah.
You might,
and
the
that's
best
why it's
for
only in one,
but not the best varnish
for
drinking.
A drinking man's varnish.
And that's why it's only in one book.
Right.
And at the Waldorf Astoria, they're like, God, Johnny, what the fuck, Johnny? Why'd you name that?
Yeah.
You had the Bronx. What the fuck?
Jap-O-Lack? I have to say that when I was reading about this guy, I started thinking, like,
maybe he just had a problem. He was off of Jap-O-Lack all the time.
Maybe that
was
like, I love Jap-O-Lack. Have you tried Jap-O-Lack? And they're like, what is it? He's like, it's a varnish. And they're like, well, I don't really need anything that needs varnish. And he's like, oh, I mean, you huff it. Like, oh,
you
were going to varnish with it?
That's why he didn't drink.
Yeah, because he stopped to put varnish on the top.
I mean, he seems like kind of a halfwit. That's when
we
I said, like, this guy's writing this book and he talks about this guy like he was some... I gotta imagine, when I was reading it, Johnny Solon must have been some, like, hot piece of ass because... And then this guy, Crockett, was like, I am so in love with this guy. And he was probably dumb as shit. Maybe he was the worst bartender. And people were like, he's good looking.
Stranger Things, though, because they're
like,
that
he's charming.
Meryl Streep movie's out about the singer, the notorious, she could not sing, but she made it all the way to Carnegie Hall. Florence something or other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe the society types were like, yeah, Johnny Solon.
Maybe it was a joke. I mean, he says he was the most popular, but maybe it was like he was just a nice kid, and he was very
well.
Handsome.
If he started with him as a fucking cashier,
right.
And then they made him a bartender,
and he kept getting passes from the customers, as they're like, But he looks so good.
He looks so good. I want him to be good.
He's handsome. And
can you make me a martini? Tastes like varnish.
But does it make
sense? That's all he heard.
That's oh, Jetlag. This way, like 30 minutes.
Just, it's okay. Just it's stop. Okay. You'll get it.
I mean, all the
people. Keep trying.
It's good. It's good. And this guy Crockett was fixing all his mistakes. He was like, I'll just make you a new one.
I'll make you a new one.
Yeah. Don't worry. But like, it all fits, shit. Right? He couldn't remember when or why he created the Bronx cocktail. Wow. It took him 30 minutes to make a mint julep, which has sugar, mint, and bourbon.
Holy shit, that's funny. Oh, shit.
I mean, it fits now. I think we cracked the case. This kid...
Johnny's special salon.
He was sailing on his legs. He couldn't even figure out. He's like, where do I work?
Where? What am I doing?
They're like,
I guess.
It's okay, here. Johnny, you're handsome. It's you're fine. Handsome. This is how people become president.
Oh,
it's like,
exactly
well,
right.
You're kind of handsome.
That's exactly right.
You're kind of charming. You might be dumb as shit, but...
Johnny Boxer Rock Salon.
Right. I think that's what it is. It's a one-off.
So was version. That was that the... the Jaffalek / Johnny Salon story?
Yeah, hey, you said he devoted the book to the guy.
He basically did. I searched for his name in this book, and it was like 95 pages out of 100.
Oh,
his
shit.
Name was like, and like, he's like, oh, and don't
and then
Johnny
said,
Salon. I was
yeah.
like, but I don't even know if this part has to do with him. It was like, this recipe's not by Johnny Salon, but I just wanted to say his name. But he was in the hotel at the time it was made.
Dude,
poor kid. He was probably like, he probably had no idea what was going on. And he was like, I got this great job at this hotel. Everybody's so nice to me. I make bad drinks. Everybody
keep
just drinks
trying, them. Johnny.
I made this one, and somebody's like, this tastes like fucking varnish.
Jeff-lack.
This tastes like Jeff-lack. It's all right, Johnny. You're a good kid.
Oh shit. God. Man.
Okay. Yeah, we gotta go to the bricks and drink some varnish.
The Jaffalek cocktail. Juice of 1/4 orange. 3/4 ounce. Via dry vermouth. 3/4 ounce. High West Double Rye Whiskey. 1 teaspoon raspberry syrup.
I went once.
What is Michael up to today?
I sent him a text, and I never got a response.
Well, at least you got him. Contact.
He's out in the world flirting with unsuspecting young women.
I'm sure.
Or even suspecting ones.
Even better if they're suspecting.
So we are here at Ward 8, because the Brixton is no more. We found a new playground, and we're having our Jaffalek here. We're having the varnish at this location. So, I'm joined here by Nicole Pizzini.
Hello.
Nicole, when was the last time you varnished something?
Probably 3 years ago when I was in art conservation, right before I switched to technology instead.
That always happens. You know, the varnishers go to technology. We're also here with Eric Martin.
Hello.
And you, sir, when was the last time you varnished something?
I think I was 10. I built a shelf out of 4 pieces of very inexpensive wood.
it looked terrible, and I did a terrible job. But I did find out that I really hated Boy Scouts after that.
We're also here with Rachel Rubin.
Hello.
And Rachel, yes. When was the last time you varnished something?
I don't know that I have ever varnished something. I think I have taken varnish. Oh, my nails. Yes, I paint my nails quite frequently.
I am shocked. Women varnish. That's just the way it is, according to Glidden.
I have found enjoyment in just the ritual of painting my nails, not so much in having painted nails, as so much like the ritual of doing it, because it's like a thing. It's like my Sunday night thing. I turn on Masterpiece Theater and I paint my nails. That's like what I do on Sundays.
Now, would that be a varnish or would that be a shellac?
Does it depend on the opacity of the
no,
you're putting on your nails?
No, the solvent.
It's the
solvent.
And we're here with paint master Kevin Rutajczyk,
right.
Who knows all about paints and shellacs and varnishes.
I will say I definitely did. And to answer your question, the last time I varnished wasn't a true varnish. It was actually water-based, and it was like 2001. But then before that, and that was a piece of furniture I inherited from my aunts. They used to have a naked furniture store in Evanston. You used to be able to get like furniture that's cheaper, that's just unfinished, and you finished it yourself.
And it's naked?
It's naked. It was like naked. It was their.
I bet you got lots of confused people in in that store.
The fragile lamp naked. No, it was lame. It was just pine.
It's like, oh, what? Oh.
And then if we actually went into like true varnish, like solvent-based stuff and like shellac, that would have been in the 90s. Back into the early 90s even.
So Nicole has you beaten on varnishing.
More recently,
she's,
absolutely.
She's a more recent
though
varnisher.
I was probably varnishing before she knew it, the word varnish. 91, I was selling them in like by 91. I used to sell it at Walburn Paint.
Okay. So the Glidden Company had this crazy marketing campaign where all of their ads had housewives varnishing floors and furniture.
I've never varnished a floor.
They were varnishing everything in these ads. It was just, and they were smiling while they did it.
Well, the fumes. You definitely smile.
That's what we kind of thought.
Oh, yeah.
that they were just, it wasn't about the varnishing.
No.
It was about, but have you ever heard of Japalac?
I hadn't heard of it, but it makes sense to me. It doesn't surprise me because we used to sell like accelerators to help things dry quicker, like Japan Dryer. And so, and like you could add that to like shellac to make it dry faster. So that name makes a lot of sense to me.
I have to say I've never been less interested in home decor than I have been at this moment. varnish in general is not a very exciting topic.
So did you guys look into the breakdown of the word, like the Jap part of it?
I was thinking like Japanese lacquer.
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of thinking. And then, I don't know, maybe it was a very sophisticated like look at that time frame that people wanted to capture here. We wanted to emulate some of the finishes. I've seen a lot of dark wood.
We kind of think that because, like, I think that there was a popular style for furniture where it was black and shiny, and it was specifically Asian. So it was like you're making your furniture Asian. Do you know anything about that?
I've been to a Taiwanese resin farm. I have.
Okay.
Where they cut like small like slits in the tree and it like drips resin out, and it takes like years and years and years to get even just like a small amount of resin from one tree. So it used to be like really expensive stuff, and now it's just like mass manufactured, super cheap, put it on everything. But yeah, resin used to be like hard to get, high quality.
We're not winning you yet?
No.
Damn. I actually really dig this.
I do like anything that's black, shiny, and Asian, though.
Oh, here it is.
Meiji too, because they're kind of small.
So this is the Japalac.
It's the Japalac.
What's in it?
The rye whiskey, dry vermouth, a little raspberry, and a little bit of orange juice.
Oh, it smells good.
What kind of a rye did you use?
We used a High West double rye. It's pretty good, like, you know, mid-tier rye. You can really taste it. It comes through really well.
And the vermouth?
We use Via Vermouth usually for most of our drinks.
Okay.
From California. It's pretty good, full flavored.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you very much,
all
sir.
Right. Enjoy.
Thank you. Well, it's a great looking drink. It smells good too.
It smells very orangey.
It looks very orangey.
That's delicious.
Yeah.
It smells like orange fruit snacks.
Yeah, it does. I do not get rye.
It tastes like fruit snacks without the sickening sweet.
I like that.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's a delicious drink.
As you mentioned, not the most marketable name.
Or unless we start a campaign where unless your bar serves Jap-a-Lack, they don't know what they're doing.
Well, that was part of what I was saying, was that maybe the bartender was trying to get into that, but like, it's one of those fails.
That drink is trouble.
They could add activated charcoal and yuzu and make it Japanese again. Make it shiny black and Japanese. Wouldn't be difficult.
And yuzu?
Yeah, it's Japanese citrus. You can't get fresh yuzu in the States, but you can get frozen yuzu. It looks like a lemon with cancer.
A lumpy lemon?
A lumpy lemon.
Are those recent? Since the nuclear meltdown?
The yuzu was ugly before Fukushima.
For the yuzu board, the yuzu was ugly before Fukushima. This drink is good.
This drink is super good. I'm getting a little bit of the rye just in, like, it's spicy at the end. But none of the burn of a rye.
I keep following it up with my coconut.
I was fully anticipating, just because of the name, a drink made with Applejack. Because, like, really, this drink doesn't have Applejack in it, I think is kind of criminal, just because of the name. The ingredients in the drink are really good, and I will continue drinking it because I think it's very tasty, but still, like, this should have Applejack in it. If you're going to call a drink Jap-a-Lack, like, really? It's a freaking spoonerism. It's silly. It's very good. I like this. I would enjoy this again.
It does taste good. It's not very complex, though. It is really smooth. I personally like something with a bit more depth, a little bit more bitter, a little bit more sour, and this doesn't have that.
No, it's right in between.
You could drink this like a soda.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. Yes. Like you said, Nikki, it's dangerous.
It doesn't have a long aftertaste. It just tastes like...
revisit that again.
Yeah, it's very light, very a little sweet.
It's got some smoke, a little bit of smoke.
That must be the rye coming through too.
Yeah. I'm curious as to why Smirnoff hasn't bottled this yet and sold it to 18-year-olds everywhere.
It's probably too expensive to make.
And it's also got real liquor in it and not malt liquor.
No.
This seems to be like what a lot of sweet beverages are trying to be right now, without it being so like sticky, syrupy, hangover fuel.
Like it's very well balanced and kind of sweet, nice finish, but like... it's warm in my chest right now.
I'm really glad this was made with rye and not with gin. I think the rye really helps it more than like a gin would.
I don't want floral.
Floral herbal in this would not. The woody, spicy is much. It's nice.
The way you were describing the ads made me think of today's equivalent, which is woman eats salad. Like where women are eating salad and feel really happy about it. Disgustingly happy. Like, salads are good. And they're good for you, and you should like eating them. But these women have something else going on.
Orgasmic salad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they should show what's going on under the salad, because I think there's more to this picture.
Like somebody underneath the table.
I also think it says something about our culture that it's only women who can enjoy salad in these photos. I would love to be orgasmically happy eating a salad. Cheaper than hookers.
Depends on the salad and the hooker, I guess.
Or if you're in Las Vegas.
Are hookers cheap in Vegas?
Salads are expensive.
We've had our varnish. Yeah, it's a good one. This is a winner.
So plug our new establishment?
Yeah, they're stuffing their faces right now with sandwiches and nachos. And Tuesday night is tiki night. We're at Ward 8 in Evanston, Illinois, which... it's really, like, right on the border of Chicago and Evanston. It's a great little place that feature old-style cocktails. And there's a sign that says, please remove baseball caps. I feel like I should probably have a cravat. So, all you fans of Black Liver Project, keep listening. Follow us on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Go to the site and see what's up. Also, we've been doing tastings. Little short tastings. You can find those on our Twitter feed. Until next time, keep on thinking and drinking. Bye now.
These pickles are amazing.
This may be my last podcast as a single person.
Well, legally unmarried. Single. Unmarried.
Thank you for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I would like to thank Jason Cruz and Mick Lehman for unraveling the history in the front part of the show, the regular tasting team Kevin Ortajczyk, Rachel Rubin, Nicole Pizzini, and Eric Martin for joining me in the grueling task of sampling each cocktail we discuss. And a special thanks to the skilled bartenders at Ward 8 in Evanston, Illinois for taming the cocktail monsters we enjoy. I would also like to thank Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic, and give us an awesome rating and tell us what you think while you're at it. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, come blacken your liver with us.